Welcome back, Turnkey family. We're your hosts, the Turnkey Brothers, brought to you by Boise Turnkey. And today on episode 8, we've got an amazing guest today. His name is Leif Carlberg, and he is a rock star lender that we've worked with in the past, and we're excited to have him on here today for you guys. He talks about a lot of great things on today's episode, and one of the things I'd like to touch on is his acronym CIA. Stay tuned to what he has to say on that, and doing the next right thing.
Hey guys, Leif takes us through A to Z, what it looks like to get your first loan. If you're curious what that process looks like, and stay tuned because we get real motivational right at the end. Hey guys, what's up? We got Leif with us today. He's a current lender, ex-basketball player, ex-basketball coach, went from the coaching world and now he's in the lending world, but he hasn't stopped coaching. What up, Leif? You can go on with that.
No, sorry, I like it. I like that tagline. It's good to be here. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming. Yeah, so get the community up to speed a little bit. Tell them a little bit more about yourself and how you got to this place in your life.
Yeah. So like Matt mentioned, spent the bulk of my life really involved in the game of basketball. Took me to the college level where I played for 4 years, spent a little bit of time traveling the world, played in the Middle East, and then played out in Australia, and then came back. I was 24 and got offered a coaching job at the school that I played at, and just always knew that I wanted to coach, and so just took the bull by the horns and really enjoyed just the college basketball atmosphere from the coaching side. Just connecting with players, connecting with people from just all different backgrounds. It was really cool, really fun. Spent 7 years coaching at the college level, and make a long story short, my wife and I started having a young family, and you know, our schedule was not really coinciding with where the basketball world was at the time for us, and just needed something a little different financially. And so we just kind of scrapped everything and went to square one. And I just started calling people that I knew, just saying like, hey, I'm looking at getting out of coaching. You got any ideas for me? And so there was actually a player that I coached. His dad lives down here in Boise. And I didn't know what he did. I just knew he was super connected. And so I knew we wanted to move down to this area. We were up in North Idaho at the time. My wife's got family down here. And so I just gave him a call. And I just said, hey, this is what I'm thinking. Like, got any ideas? Do you know anyone that's hiring? And long story short, he was in lending. He's the head of business development for a mortgage company. And he's like, yeah, I got a great idea for you. I think you'd make a good loan officer. So I'd never thought about mortgage a day in my life. Hadn't even bought a house at the time. And so, you know, for me, it was literally a whole new world. But as he boiled down kind of just the job itself, the intangibles that it takes to work with people, and just the opportunity out there in the mortgage space, it became a no-brainer, and that was actually about a year and a half ago. So
wow,
about a year
awesome.
And a half in, and loving it, and been learning a ton, and just enjoying getting to work with people.
So, nice. Yeah, the analogy goes, you know, jump out of an airplane and build your parachute on the way down. You're like the epitome of that.
Yeah.
You're just like, yep. Done with coaching, let's figure it out on the way down.
Yeah.
You know, that's a huge risk for people when we talk about moving into a new space or doing something new.
Yeah.
How did you and your family combat that unknown?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. I think, you know, my faith is what drives me. I firmly believe that, you know, God is in control, and I'm going to make decisions as if, you know, it's up to me, but as I make those decisions, I just trust that he's going to work things out along the way according to his plan. So, you know, it was never if I was going to be okay or if my family was going to be okay. I was just kind of interested to see how that was going to play itself out. But I remember I had a Zoom call with the first mortgage company I was at, one of the high producers. I just wanted to pick his brain. I was like a month in. I was like, hey, teach me what worked for you. What did you wish you knew when you first got in? And he was kind of hearing my story, and he was like, let me get this straight. You left a salary job, you know, with a wife and two young kids to get into a fully commissioned job in a place that you've never lived before, in an industry that's really network heavy. And I was like, yeah, you're making me sound kind of dumb right now. But he was like, hey, more power to you, man. Like, that's risky, kind of like you said. But I just think it's, you know, just a great case study in the fact that, you know, the people that work hard and want to really connect with people and provide solutions, provide services, And do it with like a genuine servant's heart, I think, you know, you can stand out. Yeah. So.
No, that's great. I feel like I can and I can't are the same side of each coin. It's just a matter of mindset and how you perceive it.
Yeah.
And you definitely have that I can attitude. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's been a fun journey. Yeah.
So. Okay. So now you're in lending. Tell us a little bit more about lending. So we have a lot of listeners out there who are probably first-time home buyers, first-time investors, just getting into it. You know, they don't know what a mortgage is. They don't know how to lend. What are interest rates? What are buy-downs? I know there's so many questions that I just asked you, but if you could just get like the low-hanging fruit to just open the book on what lending is to our listeners, can you walk us through that?
Yeah, and I think you're right. It's really easy to get super deep and get into the weeds really fast and go through every little scenario. And quite frankly, I just got an email this morning about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and, you know, some different regulations that are changing. So it's always evolving. It's changing on a daily basis. Obviously COVID, you know, when that hit, just kind of threw everything everywhere for a loop. And so we're still, you know, it's always evolving, but I think the main things, you know, the kind of the core tenets of what does it take to qualify are just really simple concepts for people to just kind of have in their back pocket when they choose to go down that route. Yeah. And so, you know, we look at a few main things. Kind of the acronym that I use is CIA, and with A, there's kind of a slash L, but the C stands for credit. So you obviously look at your credit score. That plays a big role in what type of financing or pricing you qualify for. And then the I stands for income. Income's a huge piece of qualifying. It's hard to convince someone to give you a lot of money if you're not making money, or if that money you're making isn't, you know, somewhat secure. And so we look at your income, and then the A stands for assets. Basically, do you have the money to bring in to close? And then with assets, that L would be liabilities. So what's your monthly debt obligations compared to the income that you're bringing in? And so we'll look at like a debt to income ratio. You guys deal a lot in the investment space. And so we'll look at just what it would take in terms of cash flow or income that they're going to get on, you know, a subject property to make sure it fits within certain debt income ratios. And yeah, there's a lot of different ways I could go down that route. But I think the overwhelming principle that I've found with, you mentioned first time home buyers is, and I was this way too before I got into lending, is I thought it would have taken way more to qualify than it actually does. And there are routes and ways that you can get really creative that they've set in place to help people, you know, just get their foot in the door and kind of get their skin in the game.
Yeah, I hear that time and time again. People are like, oh my gosh, I qualified for way more house than I thought I would have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where like I can come in as an advisor, and I really enjoy having these conversations with specifically first time home buyers. We're saying like, hey, I quite frankly couldn't care less what you qualify for. I mean, there's a base level where I need to, but like, I want to know what you're comfortable with. What fits your lifestyle? What fits your budget? Because the worst thing you can be is house poor, right? Like to get into a place and live to make your mortgage. Like that's no way to live. So
yeah,
no, that's a great place to get started. I love that acronym CIA: credit, income, assets. For a lot of people who are either listening to podcasts, reading books, don't know where to get started. There's so much going on. I can't like identify one place that I can work at, and they just get caught up in analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
Well, you just gave them the playbook on how to start. I mean, I know you're a coach, but hey, if you want to get started in investing or buying your home today, work on CIA, work on your credit, work on fixing your income, work on maintaining your assets and maybe lowering your liabilities.
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Have you ever worked with somebody on like looked at their credit and like, hey, you're not quite where we need you to be, and then given them step-by-step game plans on how to increase their credit or work on their debt to income ratio, like what to crack away at first?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a bunch of scenarios I could give you, but that's I would say one of the more rewarding scenarios that I see, you know, in my world, is to be able to see someone come in and, you know, maybe their income's great, but they just don't know how to
manage money.
Yeah. Their credit report, you look at it and it kind of takes you back a little bit, but there are certain steps that they could take that really aren't that difficult. It just takes focus, right? And a plan.
Mm-hmm.
If they put that into play, then, you know, all of a sudden their score is going to jump to where it's not just qualifying, but going to give them way better pricing too. Because it's less risk on the behalf of the lender. But there's one lady that one of the first loans I did, she came in and was getting under contract on a house, or wanted to, and her debt to income was just above where it needed to be. But she had this really big car payment. But there wasn't a ton of payments left, you know, maybe a couple years worth. What we were able to do was to pay off that car loan at closing, kind of roll right. that into the loan. That means we could offset that fat monthly payment for her that was keeping her from qualifying. And then once she was under that debt to income ratio, she was paying that car off through closing, we're there. And so for her, like, you know, she didn't even know that was an option. It got her out of a big car payment and got her into a house. So
yeah, so there's two things I want to touch on with that. One, you mentioned paying it off at closing, which yep. I know can be really important, because if somebody just goes out and pays off their car payment, it could actually negatively affect their ability to close, right?
Yeah, it definitely muddies the water a bit. You know, anything, any action you take in the lending world, you'll find out it creates a paper trail, and we need to document it, you know, and not a lot of people understand that, you know, we got hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line. Like,
yeah,
the
exactly.
lender's going to want to know, you know, what's going on
yeah, right.
In every aspect. And so, yeah, if we structure a loan a certain way, typically we like to just take care of it, you know, at the closing table with title and escrow, and that's usually the most seamless route.
Right. And the second point was the asset that you are being able to coach someone. So like right now in the market, a lot of people are fearful and they're just in a holding pattern. Well, they could be reaching out to you
yeah.
and getting an idea of what they could afford
yeah.
if they were more comfortable with a different interest rate. You
right.
know, unfortunately, with what we're hearing, it's just a lot of negativity. Like, rates are too high, even though we're in a lull right now.
Right.
This might be the last best time to buy.
Yep.
But there's really a great opportunity to be coached by an advisor like you.
Yep.
So they're set up when they're more comfortable to enter the market, and then they don't have to come to you then. And it's all of a sudden like, hey, like, I'd love to lend to you, but unfortunately we can't because of X, Y, and Z, which they could have already had, you know, in place.
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's like anything, you know, if you legitimately want to achieve a goal, there needs to be a plan in place for that goal. And, you know, some people, yeah, they might come in and apply and realize, oh, I'm approved right away. And that's great if
right.
that happens. But for a lot of people, like you're saying, like, man, you can't get time back. And if you would have come in 4 months ago and at least gotten an idea of what it would take and got a plan in place, then, mm-hmm. yeah, then you're ready to strike when the opportunity presents itself, you know. And so that's where, you know, I think that it can never be too early to at least get the conversation started. If
right.
you think at some point in your life, yeah, like, I want to buy a house or I want to invest.
Yeah, I've met so many people who want to. They're like, oh, man, I want to buy a house. I'm going to one of these days, but, you know, my credit sucks. Or, you know, I want to buy a home, but I'm renting right now and I'm just going to try to save up for money, some money or whatever. But the biggest thing is that credit score. Now, you were mentioning that you can help fix or adjust them a little bit. But what are some
quick tips?
Yes, yeah. for people today, like, who can start working on their credit? Because, man, some people, they're just like right on the cusp. Like, they just need a little bit, but they don't know how.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say one thing is, you know, there's so many moving parts when it comes to a credit score, and so it can be overwhelming to people that, you know, just see that their score sucks or whatever.
Right. Yeah. And then they don't do anything about it because, like, man, that sucks. Oh, well.
Kind of paralyzes them a little bit.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think, like, just looking for tangible things that you can do. One thing is to keep your credit balances low. And so, like, you might have, you know, 10,000 credit limit on a certain credit card. And having a credit card isn't a bad thing, like, in terms of getting your score up. It's just, how do you utilize that? So keeping that credit balance around, like, that 30%, you know, range.
Usage,
like that.
Yeah,
that's going to help your score. That's going to show strength that you know how to use that credit line, as opposed to someone who's, you know, near maxing out every line of credit that they have. So that's one thing that I'd say, like, people can pretty tangibly just, you know, keep in mind. Obviously, limit your late payments. Like, I would say, have no late payments. Like, you know, if you're gonna commit to buying something, like,
sure.
be able to at least pay the minimum payment on it. Don't get any derogatories. So
right, yeah. And then your credit limit isn't a bad thing. So if it gets increased from that 10,000 to 25,000, it's just a bank showing that they have trust in you to have that limit.
Right.
And you don't have to use that. It just sits there.
Correct.
But it doesn't look it doesn't hurt you. It actually probably helps, I would imagine.
Sure. Yep.
Would that help you? Like if I went today, I've got a credit card worth that has a limit of $10,000, mm-hmm. and I go to the bank and say, hey, I want to up my credit limit on this card. And they say, sure, we'll take up to $25,000. Will that help me show that I have a lower usage of a higher total credit?
Yeah, I mean, in theory, I would assume it would. I'd honestly probably want to see how it played out, just as a case study. You know, in my mind, in my line of thinking, that would add to the strength of your profile. But yeah, and the other thing too that I want to mention to people is like, my job isn't a credit repair specialist. There are people who work in that space that I lean on heavily when I get a credit report that, you know, I can see obviously the areas that need some fixing, but in terms of, you know, going and fighting certain things on your credit report or getting stuff taken off, like there are people that specialize in that world, and I'm like, I think a strength of mine, if I can be so bold, is to like, I know what I don't know, and so when someone comes to me with something, like I have no shame in saying like, hey, let me go find out, or you should go talk to this person because, you know, there are experts in each of those fields. So
yeah, that's fascinating.
That's very valuable in this line of work, though, because a lot of us just want to give the answer to get a payday.
Right.
I shouldn't say a lot of us. A lot of agents and a lot of commission-based individuals just give an answer to get a payday, but that's not always how we serve our customers and our clients the best.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think you're spot on there. Like, if it's about truly serving other people, which I have a deep conviction of, it's you know, does it serve them for me to tell them the answer they want to hear in the moment and make them feel good, right? Mm-hmm. Or does it serve them for me to tell them, hey, I don't know, let me go find out, or maybe to give them the hard news, right? So there's a lot of carryover from that coaching world in that concept itself that I think has just helped me kind of remain at, you know, a low pressure, you know, place to just say like, I don't need to know everything on the spot,
right?
But I can find out, and I'll find out as fast as I can.
Yeah, so. And that's how we get smarter and how we educate ourselves. It's okay to fail. It's okay to not know something.
Yeah,
you know, once we've identified that that's all right, you know, then we can start the growing process.
Yeah,
and together, and now you learn more because of it, because they asked a really good question.
Sure,
you know, that we didn't know before.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's good.
So if somebody's in the right spot, they're like, you know what, maybe I'm not ready today, but I at least want to, you know, hear what I don't know and get a game plan going. Or if they are ready to jump into it, but they're like, I don't know where to shop or where to start. Like, how would you go about shopping a lender? What would you look for in a lender?
Yeah, so if I was looking to buy a house, I mean, I personally would shop multiple lenders. I would just see who has a good fit for me personality wise. I would see who I feel like I can trust. Because I think, like you're saying, in any space, in any you know, career field, there's people that are going to look out for their interest over the interest of the people they should be serving. And so, yeah, I think your intuition can go a long way when you just talk to people and realize, like, does this person seem to be concerned about, you know, me and my scenario? And just, are they on top of me? Communication's huge. You know, you hear horror stories in the real estate world of, you know, lenders that don't communicate, agents that aren't doing their due diligence to look out for the best interest of their clients. You know, I remember when I first got into lending, I called a real estate agent that I knew actually from the college basketball coaching world. Shout out Nelly Sells in Tacoma, Washington. But I asked him, I just said, hey, as a new LO, what's one piece of advice that you would that you'd give me just in my relationships with working with agents and clients? And he said, bad news doesn't just get better. So if you have bad news, like, communicate it. Like, if you know it on Friday, but you wait till Monday to tell me, all we've done is lost 3 days in which we could find a solution. Right. And so just be upfront. Like, we all want the same thing. We're all on the same team. You know, communication in that sense, I think, is huge. And then he also followed that up with, if you have an issue, it's great if you could come with a possible solution too, you know? And
totally.
So, but to get back to your question, I just think, like, someone who communicates well, who shows care for you, you know, can't be overstated. But then let's not beat around the bush. Like, pricing is a big big deal, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can love someone, you know, and love working with someone, but, you know, it helps to have really competitive pricing, good products that are going to put you in the most strategic place financially, because at the end of the day, that's what you're going to be carrying with, you know, after that transaction's complete. Yeah. So.
Well, let's move into products a little bit since you're talking about products. I know that there's different types of loans you can get, conventional, VA, FHA. I think there's some Idaho-specific ones too. Can you maybe go through just a little bit of those products that you guys have to offer?
Yeah, so on the conforming front, you have your conventional loans, you know, your 30-year fix, Fannie, Freddie. Those are kind of your cookie cutter, you know, pretty simple transactions, like people that fit into a pretty conforming box.
It's a
conforming loan. Your FHA and your VA are government loans, and so they're actually backed by the government. VA, obviously, for individuals like yourselves who have served in our armed forces. And there's some amazing benefits that come with the VA loan. It's honestly my favorite loan to deal with for a variety of reasons. And then your FHA, you know, it's for your kind of your common citizen. There's some looser guidelines when it comes to like credit score. There's some pros and cons. You know, it's a loan where you have mortgage insurance that you're paying for the throughout the life of the loan, and that can get expensive. Typically, government pricing is a little bit better than, you know, your conforming conventional pricing, and so, you know, they might see an FHA rate and see, oh, that's like significantly lower in my interest rate, but you look at what they're paying in mortgage insurance, and there's kind of a line that you gotta see if that's gonna actually be worth their money,
right,
if they could go conventional.
Sure.
And so, but yeah, there's a variety of different, you know, qualification standards that go into the VA, the FHA, conventional. All in all, they have different loan to value maxes that it would take to qualify, whether you're a first time home buyer, whether you're looking for an investment property, second home, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
and I want to hit on something to squash, because a lot of people think FHA is first time home buyer, but FHA is just the Federal Housing Association.
Yep.
So it doesn't have to be your first home to qualify for that. So I just wanted to take a quick bit to squash that.
That's a great point. A lot of times with your FHA, you know, that's going to be for people whose credit score is in the 600s, like where you'd be getting hit if you go for a conventional loan with like a 680 credit score. Like, you're going to get hit with some price adjustments. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see those significant price adjustments when you go FHA. And so typically it's a case by case basis, but typically by looking at a borrower, I don't even bring up all the ins and outs of those loans when they apply. I just let them know there's a couple different routes we can go. And then once we build out their CIA, their credit score, what their debt to income ratio is looking like and where we might land.
Yep.
That's where I can determine, yeah, this is a good FHA borrower.
Right.
And you know, typically that's a loan where you say, hey, once you get in a position where you can, you know, refinance into a conventional loan, get rid of that mortgage insurance, that's going to be a strategic way to go, save a couple $100 a month. So.
Sure. Yeah. And this person may be wanting to buy an investment property. It might not be for themselves.
Correct.
So a VA or FHA might not be the right option in that case, correct?
Or
correct.
An option at all.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's where, you know, it helps just having an advisor to walk you through kind of what each loan entails. And, you know, you brought up Idaho Housing. I think Idaho Housing is a great option for a lot of buyers that, you know, we kind of mentioned earlier, think like, man, there's no way I could qualify for a home. You know, with Idaho Housing, they have some down payment assistance programs that have helped a lot of my buyers get into houses. Even just last month, had a couple buyers utilize a down payment assistance program. They came in with 0.5%. And they were able to borrow the rest, you know. And,
wow.
Yeah, and so that's where, like, you know, $1,500 could get you into a home.
Yeah.
And again, like, we're not trying to slide you in by the skin of your teeth and put you in a position where you're not comfortable. But for a lot of people, you know, especially as we're seeing prices soften, mm-hmm. you know, that down payment assistance can at least get their skin in the game to where now they can build wealth,
yeah.
you know, through real estate and you know, put their money to work for them.
That's awesome. I want to touch on something, because a lot of the gurus or a lot of the bigger podcasts out there are always talking about these different types of loans or how powerful a VA loan is. But I want to touch on how powerful a lender is, because I don't care where you are in this country, what state you're in, every state's going to have some kind of different assistance program or something different that you don't just know about, you know? But when you go to a lender, a rockstar lender like yourself, and you ask Life, hey, what are some of my options? He's going to tell you, hey, your situation, your CIA, like, you kind of fit this mold. We can get you into the Idaho housing program, and we can get a win-win for everybody here.
Yeah,
and I think there's other things, too, that, you know, it's good to know that these options are out there. It's like having a parent co-sign on a loan for you, you know, like basically saying, hey, my dad, he's not going to live in the house, but I'm using his credit profile. I'm using his income. Now we'll take the lowest credit score out of the two of you. But if you can use his income towards your debt to income ratio, so your dad makes, you know, some good money and he's willing to help, he doesn't even have to spend a dime on the property. If you have the money for the down payment, mm-hmm. You're kind of using him to back you, and the lender can say, "Yeah, I'll use his profile in qualifying you." Boom. That's how a lot of young individuals are getting into houses now. Yeah. And so, co-signer is a great option. You know, gift funds if you have a family member that is willing to contribute in that way. There's a lot of different routes you can go that just make it, I guess, tangible. You know.
Yeah. So I wanted triple tap this and just say, like, there's a definite difference between a rock star and a budget. Like, you can go on and get a budget loan, you know, that one of those internet loans today, and they'll boast the lowest prices anywhere. But that being said, like, you could get qualified, sit in your loan and think that you're getting the best deal, but you'll save hundreds, if not thousands, by going to a rock star that doesn't stop working. And that's one reason why I choose you as my preferred lender, is because I've seen you not stop working. You don't have a guaranteed payday, but you will make a good situation better, which is something that we always learn in our SEER course, you know, our survival course. Even if you're fed for the night, you have water for the night, and you have shelter for the night, you can always make it better. You can make it warmer, or you can waterproof it, or you can get more food, or you can stack more water. Because what happens if you need to be in that situation longer than a night?
Right.
Anyways, making a good situation better, and that's one thing that a rock star will do, is they won't stop working for you. Where a budget lender, they already have their guaranteed payday.
Right.
You know, what incentive do they have? Right.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I'm not here to call anybody out. I think, like, the proof is in the pudding, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you go get a burger at McDonald's and you get a burger at Red Robin, like, they're both burgers, you know. And it's like there's a difference there, though, right? And and you know, you might pay a little bit more for one. The cool thing about being a broker, and we'll get into this here in a second, but the opportunity that I have now to provide great service at very low cost, low margins in terms of how we operate as a mortgage broker, like, to me, kind of gives me the best of both worlds. So that, like, yeah, I don't have to sacrifice the customer service aspect. I can still work as hard as possible for my clients, but also do it, you know, knowing full well that they're getting the best pricing out there. So,
okay, so let's go into that. What's the difference between, like, a broker and a retail mortgage lender?
Yeah, so I actually started out in the retail space. I worked at a retail mortgage bank, and honestly had a great experience. They were great people. We provided great service. The reality is with a retail lender, the infrastructure that you're working under, there's a lot of hands, I guess, that get a piece of that pie when you offer products. And so, you know, you kind of have your base rate, but banks make money when they sell those loans on the secondary market. You know, the vast majority of loans that are being originated aren't going to be serviced by that mortgage company. They're going to be sold to investors, right? And so what they charge when they sell to investors on the secondary market is really the money that they're going to be making. And so it's kind of the margins that you are playing within is kind of what dictates your pricing. And so when I made the move over to Fulcrum Home Loans, which is a mortgage broker here in the Treasure Valley, our margins are just very, very slim. We charge a set 200 basis points on every loan we originate. And so in comparison, most retail banks are charging between 300 and 350 basis points per loan. And so that's basically a point in and of itself that we're charging less than most of our competitors. And so as a broker, we just have less overhead. We don't have an underwriting team that we're paying for, a marketing team that we're paying for, you know, all these layers to the company that need to get paid every time we originate a loan. Those are being paid for by the wholesale lenders that we're sending business to. And so a big one that we use is United Wholesale Mortgage. Idaho Housing is another lender that we'll send business to. They're the ones that are paying for their underwriters, their funding department, their disclosure team, like all that stuff. We don't have to worry about making money for. And so really what it does is I see it as like an efficient way to do business, right? So you basically have less overhead. And so in return, I can offer my clients a product that is significantly cheaper in rate or points. And right. So that's where, you know, when you take a loan estimate from us and compare it to, you know, a credit union or a retail bank, you're going to see, you know, significantly less fees just because of how we've structured things.
So wow. Two things on that. Just I want to go over and broad stroke or refine a little bit two definitions, like points and basis points. Can you just touch on both of those?
Yeah. So it's essentially like a discount point would be a percent of your loan amount. Okay. And so, you know, you'll see, especially in a high rate environment, I would see loan estimates come across my desk and, you know, they'd be advertising a certain rate that looked really competitive. But when you look in the lender fees section, you see, you know, they're paying, you know, an origination fee, which is one discount point to get to that rate.
1% of the entire loan.
Yeah, exactly. So they're paying, you know, if it's a $400,000 loan, that's $4,000 that they're paying up front to get that rate.
And by they, you mean the borrower.
The borrower, correct. And so a lot of borrowers, and I'd be the same way if I didn't know any better. You know, I go back to before I got into lending, you know, you think you're, you know, just looking at the cost of doing business. And for that lender, that may be the case. You know, where we're at, we don't have an origination fee. And so we have one underwriting fee that we charge with all of our lenders. And so we're basically able to give them a true par rate in terms of what we're making off the loan. And so when we get a quote, even if another lender looks like, you know, they're at where we're at or maybe a little bit below, what we try to get them to see is an apples to apples comparison. You know, in terms of what's the total cost in fees that you're paying to get to that rate. And you don't necessarily have to pay that
right.
through us. But if you did, hey, this is where you could buy your rate down to. And that tends to, you know, allow people to just peel back the layers a little bit. And so that's, you know, just part of that education you talk through, just trying to help people understand where their money's going. And if they want to buy the rate down, if it makes sense for them, do they think they're going to be in that loan for X amount of months to where they're going to break even on the interest that they'd be saving right. monthly, right? And so, and if not, then hey, it's probably not worth it to buy it down. Yeah. You know, may be a time in the future where you're going to be refinancing here pretty soon.
Right. Yeah. Or in this market, we get the seller to buy it down for them, which right. is an option. And then they're not out any money. So if they do refi, then they just got all the benefits without having to worry about the if they paid off that
totally.
Buy down.
Yep.
So that second thing that I wanted to get into is you mentioned not paying for underwriting. You still have access to underwriters though, right?
Yeah. So the wholesale channel, the wholesale lenders that we use, obviously they want to make our lives as easy as possible, right? Yeah. Like they want our business. And so what I've seen is just some pretty incredible technology that they're leveraging to have access to the people that we need to be in touch with, our underwriters, the disclosure team. We have account executives at every wholesale lender that we send loans to that are basically there to make sure that our lives are as easy as possible to get these loans done. And so it's been super efficient. I mean, the time that our loans are spending in underwriting are just, you know, blowing my mind every time I send a loan in. You know, we're talking same day approvals, one day approvals. Wow. Like as long as we have a clean file and we do our work up front, you know, these underwriters are doing their job. They're specializing in what they do, and then they're getting compensated for it by their employer, and we're doing our job up front and making sure that everyone's kind of firing on all cylinders. So,
yeah, that can make a difference when closing on a home. You know, you find the right property at the right price, and getting that Rockstar team together to close the loan quicker than anybody else will, you know, and at the same time doing your due diligence. You know, there was this quote, and it's from a book. I don't remember which one it's from, but it talked about Michael Jordan being one of the greatest basketball players of all time. That's great. That's fine and dandy, but he didn't have any rings. You know, he didn't win any championships. It wasn't until that he built a team around him and got those players and the coach, you know, and built that solid rock star team that he started winning championships. And that couldn't be any more truthful than what we have here today, because when you build that rock star team around you, there's no limit to what you can do.
Right. Yeah. It's if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. You know, it's love like that whole idea.
Yeah. And it's not just closing early. It's actually getting to the closing table, which is so important, because I've seen firsthand lending fall through, and it's, you know, just based on the lender. It's humiliating for the client, and it's heart-wrenching, really, because they have, whether it's investment that they have already done their due diligence on, they ran their numbers, and they're ready to start cash flowing on it, or they're excited about it because it's going to build their generational wealth, or it's a primary residence where it's somebody they've already pictured themselves in that home, and week of, the whole deal falls through. They're not able to close because of something, a mistake that somebody else made. So there's really, I don't think there's any excuse for that. And having that rock star team, like, it's not, there's no amount of money I could save to put myself in that situation, and especially not see my clients in that situation. Moving forward, though, could you walk us through what the loan process looks like? Like, if somebody has never even had a conversation with a lender, they want to buy a home, where does the loan go, coming from walking in your door for the first time to getting that closing table? What's that process look like on your side?
That is a really good question. I think for me, I enjoy having an initial phone call up front. I just like getting to know the people I'm working with, hearing their goals, hearing a little bit about their situation, just so I kind of have some notes to work off of when I see that file come through. I'll ask them about their income situation. I'll ask them who all is going to be involved on the loan, what type of purchase this is going to be. The application itself is pretty straightforward. 10 minutes it takes to fill out online. And then we have an online portal where they'll just upload the documents that we need. And I'm kind of a stickler when it comes to docs up front, just because like I want to work efficiently. I want to do a service to not only the real estate agent, but the borrower themselves, and be able to get them answers. And the only way I can do that is if I get my eyes on what I need to see. So, we'll really stress getting our docs in up front, uploaded in the portal, and then we'll start building out the file. And if we get docs right away, we can get same day pre-approvals back out to them, showing them, you know, whether they want to see what their max purchase price is, what they want to see a certain listing price would get them in a monthly payment. You know, we can run a number of different scenarios for them. But then basically giving them that pre-approval letter is kind of like a coupon to go shop with, you know. The coupon essentially just telling the sellers that, I've been vetted. Like I've gone through the process to show that I actually can buy this house. And I want that pre-approval to mean something. Right. And so that's, another piece of advice I got from an agent early on is like, hey, when you give me a pre-approval letter, like I want that to mean something. I want to know for a fact that like these people are good. I take a lot of pride in that. So doing that work up front just gives them the freedom to go shop. As we've worked with before, we'll get that pre-approval out, and then that's where the agent and the buyers can go shop kind of with a peace of mind and knowing like, you know, hey, this is something that's in my wheelhouse. And now they can actually, you know, visualize themselves in this place. When they want to put in an offer, essentially, I'll just run some property tax numbers, make sure we're dialed in on all the specifics of that purchase, and we'll get an updated pre-approval with that address out so that you can put it in with the offer. From there, it's opening up escrow and making sure now that we're updating our documents. If I got bank statements early on that said, you know, we had enough money to close, then, you know, I'm going to want to update those documents if need be to make sure you still got enough money to close, especially if you were right on the verge. In that process, once they get under contract, I'll talk to them about locking their rate, kind of depending on where the rate environment is at. You know, it might be the situation as was for a few months prior to this where we're just locking right away. You know, we don't know where rates are going to go. So if you're under contract, like let's lock. Or it might be the case where, hey, we have some reason to believe that rates might be improving a little bit. So we might wait it out, see where some, you know, economic reports come out and what effect that might have on rates. And then we can lock, you know, further down the road. So it really comes down to the buyer. It's got to be their decision. But that's another conversation where you kind of, you know, you're able to counsel and walk people through, you know, making that decision. So, but yeah, that's essentially like getting into contract from that first phone call. It's really not as involved as people might think. It can happen pretty quick if the clients are motivated.
Yeah, and it's nice to have someone like you to ask questions along the way.
Absolutely. Yep. So let's talk about rates, because that's probably what is on everyone's mind.
Like, yeah.
What do you, and this is going to be outdated, so, you know, today is the 7th of December 2022, depending on when you're listening to it. So what do you see rates doing?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've gotten really good at telling people, you know, that I don't have a crystal ball. You hear
you
that
don't?
All the time. Yeah.
I thought we told you to bring it today.
Yeah,
you didn't bring
doing,
it?
Man?
Yeah,
mine's
if you find one, let me know, because I could be a rich man. But, you know, I think what we've seen, especially in recent months, is just this battle with inflation. And I think inflation's been the main driver for where rates have gone. And so if you look a few weeks ago when we got that really nice improvement, it was coming on the heels of some inflation numbers that came out better than expected. And so I think investors were encouraged that inflation was a little bit more under control. The only prediction that I'll give, if you even want to call it a prediction, is next week when those inflation numbers come out for the month of November, you know, that could have a big bearing on where rates go. You know, if we see another month where inflation numbers look good, or at least better than, you know, than expected, or better than where they were, I could see another improvement coming. That's not, you know, predicting that that will happen, but, you know, at this point with high rates, people want rates to improve, right? Mm-hmm. But we just need the economic data to give reason to why they should. So
yeah, I think it's crazy because 6 months ago everyone was saying, well, I'm not going to buy right now because prices are too high. I'm going to wait for them to come down.
Yeah.
Well, here they are. They've come down because they've raised the rates. And now they're saying, well, the rates are high. I'm going to wait for the rates to come down because now the housing's down. Well, with our low demand that we still have, you know, as soon as the rates start to come down, if they want them to come down where the, you know, where they're waiting for them to come down, the prices are going to shoot back up again. And now they're going to be in another high demand market.
Yeah, and I'll just
compete with everybody.
No, for sure. And I'll speak to this. Like, if you talk to people in our office, you know, me personally, some other producers in our office, we're getting a lot of applications still. There's still people that want to buy.
Yep.
And if we look at the rate of apps that we've been getting, you know, there's from what I can tell, a lot of people on the sideline right now that are pre-approved that are just trying to do exactly what you said, just wait and time it and be, you know, in that perfect position. But the reality is, like, they're not the only ones. And so once that does happen, the competition that's going to come with it and everything that that can entail is going to be a whole different ballgame. And so, you know, I think that's something to keep in mind. You never want to push or you know, force anybody into making a decision. But it is important to take a step back, kind of have a big picture view and see, man, you know, everyone was complaining about how high prices were for a long time. And now we're finally seeing some relief. Is there some opportunity here?
Yeah. One of my favorite sayings, which I ripped off from Bigger Pockets, is it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people see, or they have this like purchase price or this interest rate mentality. But what they don't see is they've now spent months waiting, where that's months that not only they have a known asset if they did their due diligence and they actually got into contract, but that's months that they lost in getting their principal paid down by their tenant. And then what if prices do skyrocket tomorrow? Well, now they have all that appreciation that they'll be able to buy down into a lower interest rate, maybe pull their investment back out, reinvest in something else, and they're still cash flowing because they're at a lower interest rate on an asset that has been giving them money in their pocket through depreciation and through principal pay down during that entire time that maybe was a little bit more painful than they would have liked.
Right.
Yeah. And the education that they learned by doing so, you know, they don't get that time back. There's no reason to not start achieving your goals today. So speaking of goals, as we close out this segment, one question we like to ask our guests while we're here is, what's one thing, in your opinion, that you would tell our listeners that they could start doing today to start achieving their goals?
So a principle that came to mind when you asked that question is one that we use with our players back when I coached. And excuse me. What we would tell them is your mindset should always be do the next right thing. And so, you know, we'd kind of flesh that out for them. Like in the game of basketball, if you miss a shot, hey, don't sulk about it. Don't like feel bad for yourself. Do the next right thing, right? There's transitions happening. You got to be ready to go. You got to be ready to move and to pivot, right? If you turn the ball over or if you foul somebody, do the next right thing, right? Always be moving forward and seeing how can you better yourself, better your situation. We'd also be like, hey, if you skip class, like do the next right thing. Come tell me that you skipped class so we can get you back on track, you know, academically. But I think that rule applies to life. I think it applies to investing. I think it applies to home ownership, relationships. Like you can flesh that out a long way mm-hmm. in terms of like, what is the next right thing that I can do? Don't let mistakes compound, right? Like maybe, yeah, I haven't had time in the market. And I do want to head down this path. Well, what's the next right thing? Maybe it's getting a hold of a lender and getting, you know, in my stuff in order so that I can get pre-approved or get in a position to buy. You know, there's always an opportunity to do the next right thing. So it just takes a little bit of a mindset shift to think like, well, first, what is the next right thing? But that's also how you achieve respond to success too, right? Like just because you have one little win, you don't just sit back and think like, man, I hit it right. Like I'm pretty good. No, it's like, well, hey, do you want to build on that? We'll do the next right thing. Like always be moving forward, taking steps in the right direction, whether you're failing or whether you've failed or whether you've succeeded.
So. Yeah. One of my biggest things that I always say is fail early, fail often, fail forward.
Yeah.
And you just connected the dots for me on that because of that fail forward part. You know, it's okay to fail. Yes. It's okay to fail often. We need to. That's how we learn. But what's most important is that we fail forward and we're consistent at it.
Right.
And we move forward. We take those mistakes. We do the next right thing.
Yeah.
And that's what's so important. That's what builds consistency. And that's what builds wealth over time. Okay. So do you have anything else to say?
Yeah. Well, I feel like I have to put in my tidbit because we're all being motivational here. So don't regret, you know, reflect if you have to, pivot, and then execute appropriately. Is my little two cents.
I love it. I love it.
But from there, let's close out and just, dude, you've really made like approaching a lender feel human, which is awesome. But how can people reach out to you if they do want to start that conversation?
Yeah. So on Instagram, my handle is @LifeLens. My name looks like Leaf. So yeah. There may be easy to misspell that.
L-E-I-F,
yeah,
right?
There you go. But yeah, my website, www.lifecarlberg.com is my online application. But I would just reach out either over email or just send me a text. I don't know how we can make my phone number available, but I want to be accessible to people. So my email is leif@fulcrumloans.com. But yeah, I'm more than happy to answer any questions or just you know, collaborate with anyone that's just thinking about taking steps forward with some financing. So
yeah, that's huge. We really appreciate having you. That was awesome.
Sweet. Yeah. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, we're the Turnkey Brothers, and thanks for tuning in with us today.
Don't forget to smash our algorithm with those likes, subscribes, and sharing it with someone you think would benefit from this episode.
Also, don't forget to follow us on your favorite social media platforms @Turnkey Brothers.